From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Day One of Insight in 2019. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thousands of federal employees in California, Nevada, and across the country, though, are starting this new year caught in the partial government shutdown. Today is day 12 of that, and we're going to start the new year with the political junkie, Ken Rudin, because many of us are back from a long holiday break. Although I know, Ken, there was no break in the politics or your work during this holiday season. In any event, Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Beth. And of course, politics do not take a break or do not take a break when there's a holiday or a new year. And everybody thinks, well, you know, it's December and nobody's paying attention and nothing is happening. Nothing may be happening with regarding the shutdown of the government, but certainly politics doesn't take a break at all.
On your newsletter, Ken, right after the Christmas holiday, you sent it out with the headline, wishing you a happy, healthy, and please, sane new year. So
yeah, lots of luck with that, right?
that was a really tall order. But what is your broad view right now as we step into 2019, given all that we're in the midst of?
Well, obviously, there's a big change, and we heard this in your newscast just a few seconds ago. I mean, the fact is that starting tomorrow, the Democrats will now take control of the House, thanks to their 40-seat gain in the November elections. Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker of the House, and no longer will there be united Republican government. No longer will there be any kind of blockings of kind of investigations into Trump alleged misdoings. And when I say Trump, I mean the administration and his campaign. So unlike the Devin Nunes's and the Paul Ryans of the world who basically shrugged their shoulders or were more anxious to focus on Hillary's emails, for goodness sakes, there will be subpoenas and there will be investigations into what the president knew and what he and when he knew it. So that changes absolutely as well.
So let's talk about two factors, Nancy Pelosi and the vote that's going to come tomorrow, her promise that the House is going to pass legislation, at least from the House, to end the government shutdown. I also then want to talk about incoming Utah Senator Mitt Romney and the op-ed that was published in The Washington Post. So let's start with Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I mean, once upon a time, if you remember during the campaign of 2018, all the way back in 2018, there was not too few number of Democrats who said that they will make sure not to vote for Pelosi when the Democrats convene in 2019.
That sort of fizzled even before the Christmas holiday, didn't it?
It did. And one of the reasons is because Nancy Pelosi is the ultimate political operative who knows how to count votes, knows how to raise money. And again, she said, look, I don't care if you're conservative or a liberal. I don't care if you're pro-Pelosi or anti-Pelosi. The fact is you have a D next to your name, and that's all I care about. So, yes, she did make some concessions. She did raise some of her adversaries to key positions in the new Congress. And, of course, she did agree that she'll put herself on a four-year limit on her leadership. In other words, she will step down in 4 years, of course. The voters may have the Democrats step down for the majority in 2 years. But having said that, given all the fact that she gave up, she is a survivor. And not only is she a survivor, she has to be one of the big winners of 2018, considering the fact that so many people were writing her obituary. And here we are. We're going to see her as being sworn in as Speaker tomorrow. And yes, she will have to wrestle with the two factions of the Democratic Party, the ones that want, you know, impeachment now and the ones who want, health care for all and Medicare for all and single payer positions for health care, and others who basically still represent some Trump districts where there are more conservative, you know, it's more of a swing districts. And she knows that for them, for these moderate Democrats to win re-election and succeed and win re-election in 2020, she's going to have to not put a left-wing agenda through that could alienate a lot of voters. So I'd rather be in the majority than the minority, but at the same time, it's going to be some kind of juggling for Nancy Pelosi to keep her new majority focused.
Oh, that may be an understatement. Let me go back to your newsletter. And your phrase was prepare to fasten your seatbelts, because with the way Congress was previously, with Republican control of the presidency and both houses, now we will have the partisanship on display. And wouldn't this be the ultimate test of not only her talents, but anyone who positions themselves as someone who can work across the aisle and create any kind of compromise?
Well, see, that's the thing is, we like to, every time we go into a new Congress, and tomorrow starts the 116th Congress, we always like to say that maybe this one will be better, that maybe we'll all agree on infrastructure reform. Maybe we all agree on, lowering the price of prescription drugs. There are some things that both parties ostensibly should agree with, but given the fact that we are now approaching 2020, the next presidential election, of course, once there's one election out of the way, the next one is always happening. And the fact is that so many of the Democrats, many Democrats in the House and Senate are already looking at a presidential run. And the fact that Robert Mueller may be, getting even closer and closer to the president and the folks who helped elect him in 2016, I mean his staff as well as perhaps the Russians. Mm. So it's not going to be an easy task. So for all the things that the Democrats would love to get accomplished, and they have a very large laundry list, of voting rights and an ending of gerrymandering making sure that presidential candidates release their tax forms. Well, it's nice to have an agenda in the House, but when you have Mitch McConnell standing in the way in the Senate, it'll be very interesting to see if anything gets through the House and Senate and onto the president's desk. But at least the Democrats will try to offer an alternative to what we've been seeing for the past 2 years and push through legislation that the American people can support.
Before we get too far away from the government shutdown conversation, just a quick question that I think you can give a quick answer to. But is this discussion of the wall and border control becoming now a metaphor, as we heard references to over the weekend, or is it literal? Are we seeing the conversation change as of today?
I don't think we are, but I think it's very fair to say that it is both a real wall, a big, beautiful wall, as the president likes to talk about, but it is a metaphor for basically, the fact that the president is blaming the Democrats for the deaths of two immigrant children who tried to come into the country, the fact that the president goes to Iraq and attacks Democrats for not building the wall, could you imagine? This was a Christmas message to U.S. troops in Iraq. Could you imagine Lyndon Johnson going to Vietnam and attacking Eugene McCarthy or attacking Republicans over his Vietnam policy? So a lot of it is a metaphor for, so-called weakness on security and borders that Trump thinks the Democrats are responsible for. But at the same time, he is still insisting on a $5 billion wall. And that seems pretty real to me.
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie. And you kind of segued nicely for me into this op-ed that Mitt Romney published. Now, people might remember him, of course, as the Republican nominee in 2012. He is the senator-elect now from Utah. Before he gets to Capitol Hill, this op-ed is published. The very first sentence reads, "The Trump presidency made a deep descent in December." And it goes from there.
So this is pretty remarkable. Let's not forget that Mitt Romney's niece is Ronna McDaniel, who happens to be the chair of the Republican National Committee.
Yeah.
But given the fact that we no longer will have John McCain and Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and other quasi-independent, I say quasi because they didn't always match their words with their actions, but the fact that he is coming in, even before he comes in, he's putting President Trump on notice that his tactics and his behavior are unacceptable. My goodness. I mean, you know, I mean, Mitt Romney's a fascinating guy. We knew in 2016 he disparaged President Trump on many, many occasions. And yet he was clearly campaigning to be Secretary of State in the Trump presidency in 2017. So I don't know what to make of Mitt Romney. I think I think he's going to be a very fascinating character, person to watch in the new Congress, especially, as I said, with McCain and Flake and Corker gone.
So that's interesting, Ken. I think you were just suggesting that in the absence of some of the other iconic Republicans that have been part of the contemporary Republican Party, he's staking a claim to stepping in and being one of those center stage people, but not in alignment with fully in alignment with the president. He does write in this op-ed, it is not that all of the president's policies have been misguided. He goes on to say, but policies and appointments are only a part of the presidency. And then he adds that he will support policies that he believes are in the best interest of the country and his state, and he's going to oppose those that are not.
Well, see, that I think that explores and kind of illustrates the two different Donald Trumps. I mean, look, Mitt Romney is very happy with the president's conservative policies. He loves the fact that there have been conservative judges confirmed by the Senate. He loves the fact that it's a more muscular foreign policy. He loves the thought of a tax cut that may not have benefited everybody and may have increased the debt, shall we say, by a lot of money. But these are policies that Mitt Romney and other conservatives like. What Romney doesn't like and has made clear is Trump's tendency to ignore facts, to perhaps even lie. People are afraid to use that word, but I think lie is a fair word given the fact that so much of what the president said is clearly not true. And the fact that he's so divisive and just rips apart, you know, I mean, the fact that he recently, as I said, you know, he went to Iraq and attacked Democrats. He attacked General McChrystal. What do you call him? He called him somebody who opens up his big dumb mouth, and he's a Hillary lover. I mean, this is what the president does that drives Republican nuts. But unlike Mitt Romney, most of these Republicans will keep their big mouths shut. Mitt Romney doesn't look like he's going to do that. It'd be very fascinating to watch the role Mitt Romney plays in our body politics and in the new Senate.
Part of the president's response to that op-ed was that he said he would have preferred that Mitt Romney focus on border security, and then he added a quip, I won big, he didn't. Hey,
yeah,
Ken.
Yeah, well, let's for the record, let's point out that Mitt Romney got 47% of the vote in 2012, and Trump got 46% of the vote. But in all fairness, Trump is president, and Mitt Romney didn't win. But again, you know, this is not all about Donald Trump. He has to realize that his majority in the Senate may have increased, but it's gone completely in the House. And again, as I say, as Mueller gets closer, as maybe some Republicans talk about more being more and more independent, and more people, fewer and fewer people are starting to believe what the president keeps talking about with his claims. This could be a very challenging, this sounds like but this is going to be a very challenging year for the president. And you know that when the president is challenged, he gets more and more erratic with more and more lashing out. So, you know, I'd love to say that I move into a new year with more and more optimism every year, but it's harder and harder to do it with these kind of politics.
Elizabeth Warren says she's going to jump into the race, hitting the campaign trail in Iowa. And her quote was, I'm in this fight all the way. And the president's response to that was, well, I guess he was asked, do you think Elizabeth Warren believes she can win? And he said, I don't know. You'll have to ask her psychiatrist. So you can tell what's happening there already.
Elizabeth Warren, of course, has been sparring with President Trump, I think, from day one. And she should expect, and she does expect, the fact that the president is going to lash out at everything he does, everything from Pocahontas to DNA tests to everything else. But Of course, Elizabeth Warren is not going to have the field to herself. Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand are other senators who are probably going to announce in the next couple of weeks. We don't know about Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Sherrod Brown of Ohio. Other senators, there's a score of former governors who are probably going to run. Bernie Sanders is likely to run. Joe Biden, we're all watching to see what he does.
What do you think there, Ken? What do you think about Joe Biden? Do you think Joe Biden will jump in?
I don't know. He's talking like a candidate. Of course, he's 76 years old. I don't know what that means anymore. I think there's more and more of a, you know, when you saw what happened and who was elected in 2018, you think there's more of a demand for younger candidates and perhaps more representation of the new demographics.
Are you
women
saying no?
And minorities and things like that.
Is this a no? Are these your reasons why you don't
No, but it's not a no because, I mean, I think the only reason he didn't run in 2016 is one, Hillary Clinton seemed to have this big lead,
yeah.
And of course the death of his son,
exactly.
Beau, but now I'm hearing people talk about, well, maybe have Joe Biden team up with Beto O'Rourke, announce that early, and, you know, because there's going to be at least maybe 30 Democrats. You talked about, remember in 2016, we couldn't get enough of all the Republicans on one debate stage,
right.
Because it was such a big giant field. We're talking about maybe 30 candidates. I mean, I don't know how viable they all
are. Yeah, and I do think Joe Biden jumping in would eliminate quite a number of those candidates.
I'm not convinced of that. I mean, the fact is that, yes, he has name recognition, and yes, he's beloved he was in the Senate for like 175 years, two terms as the loyal vice president. But I don't, has his time, you know, come and gone? I don't know. Mm. Is the Democratic electorate more impatient and more activist? I don't know. But boy, it's going to be some wild ride in 2019 for presidential politics.
All right, Ken, 2018 is in the rear view mirror. Give me your top two impactful political events. What stood out, number one and number two, for you in the year behind us?
There are so many things I can.
I know you only get two.
I only get two. Okay. I'll talk quickly. I think the two things that hit me the most, I think, were the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. Mm-hmm. And I think, given the fact of the Me Too movement and what women have gone through, the fact that the Senate voted for a nominee who may have behaved untoward towards Christine Blasey Ford, who went through all this, you know, great expense to her own personal life to testify against him. I think that said a lot about what's going on in this country, about the difference between men and women, and how women are still not believed. They keep saying, oh, women should come forward and talk about what happened. But even when women do, they're still ridiculed by the President of the United States. So to me, the Kavanaugh hearing was gigantic. And of course, boy, there's so many more things. I would also say the election,
right.
Given the fact that for 2 years, the president seems to have had his way with Congress, with the Devin Nunes's and the Paul Ryans of the world. And that's much different than the Adam Schiff's and the Nancy Pelosi's of the world Trump will now face with Democratic control of the House. So that's big, too.
Okay. I know if you had a third, you would put the Helsinki summit on the list and step into the whole Robert Mueller investigation. So I'm kind of giving.
I just say one thing, and I would, you know what? I would also put on the loss, the death of George Bush and John McCain, because even though they were both imperfect people, they represented a civility and decency that we will rue the day that we've lost. So I think those losses are big as well.
Imperfect people, huh? Isn't that a description for every single person on this planet? Well,
I know, and yet we will miss them because they believe in something that is dwindling in our politics today that really just touches me, breaks my heart, that for somebody who loves politics as much as I do, to see that lack of civility for the past, not just 2 years, but it's been growing for far more than 2 years, and it's very disheartening.
Well, I don't want to kick off a new year with a tone of being sad or morose. However, let's just say, Ken, that there is going to be an awful lot unfolding ahead of us that we can't even predict or expect right now. We'll be here to talk about it throughout the year, but who knows what's to come.
And the fact that it will be here every week, that's what makes America great, don't you think?
Well, it certainly makes Cap Radio great. All right. Thanks a lot, Ken. Happy New Year. We will talk to you next week when we'll be talking about the inauguration of a brand new governor in California whose name is not Jerry Brown.
I can't believe Jerry Brown is leaving us. Beth, Happy New Year to you and to all the listeners.
That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and you are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.